Doug said.
I understand that they are leaning over backwards to support Foray, Bonai replied, although I don't see what good it will do them. A boy was spearfishing for octopus out in the shallows by the reef, she saw. He lunged and pulled a pulpy tangle of tentacles out of the water on the end of his spear. It writhed helplessly, no larger than his hand. He bit its head, and the writhing immediately stopped. She wished she could be out there, too, having fun. With Doug. We're talking to the head of the network and trying to make a case for fairness, balanced reporting and all that, Doug said. Without waiting for her to reply, he added, In the meantime, it occurred to me that Kiribati might broadcast the video in your hotels, maybe even bounce it off your commsat so the rest of the Pacific nations can see it. She frowned slightly.
But isn't the video the property of Global News? Wouldn't our airing it cause copyright problems? To say nothing of the UN's reaction.
This time she watched Doug's face as she waited. He looked so earnest, so determined. Yes, it probably would cause a flap, but we've got to show the world what really happened here.
Ah, she said, understanding. Doug was continuing. We need airtime, Tamara. We need to tell the world that we've declared independence and we're serious about it, and we didn't kill that peacekeeper captain. Especially in the United States, we need to get our side of the story to the people.
And this will force the issue. I see. For nearly 3 seconds, she waited. Then Doug asked, Will you do it for us, Tamara? Will you help us?
On one condition, she replied.
She enjoyed watching his face turn perplexed.
One condition? What is it?
That after all this is over, you come here to Tarawa and go fishing with me.
He smiled at her once he heard her words. You've got a deal, Doug said fervently.
Day 8.
This is intolerable, Joanna was raging. We've been kept in quarantine for 3 days now.
The image of the UN flunky on her phone screen seemed serenely unperturbed, as bland and inflexible as a wax dummy.
I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Brudnoy, he said in an infuriatingly soft voice, but the quarantine is for your own safety. You have no idea how strongly public opinion feels about the killing of Captain Munasinghe. If you were allowed out without our protection, it could be quite dangerous for you.
Joanna glanced up from the screen to her husband, stretched out on the couch across the room. Lev knows how to accept imprisonment, she thought. It must be in his Russian genes. But to the image on the phone screen, she said, Now look, I'm perfectly capable of arranging my own security. I could have a small army of bodyguards here in Corsica in a few hours if you'd allow me to make a phone call back to my corporate headquarters in Savannah.
Aren't you comfortable in your quarters? The bureaucrat asked. Our instructions were to see that you had the very best suite.
The best suite in your jail? Joanna spat.
Really, Mrs. Brudnoy.
Your damned medical tests have shown we're not infested with nanobugs. I don't care what your so-called security risks are. I want to get out of here.
I'm afraid. The bureaucrat's vapid expression suddenly changed. He blinked several times, and a small knot of anxiety appeared between his brows.
One moment, please.
The phone screen went blank. Joanna wanted to scream. She looked over at her husband.
Lev, how can you just lie there?
I'm planning our escape, he said quite seriously. All we need is a tunneling machine.
Before Joanna could reply, the screen chimed, and Georges Foray's face appeared, scowling like a miniature thundercloud. The newscast from Kiribati came through while Foray was in his office discussing economic controls over international air traffic. He did not have the luxury, then, of demolishing the furniture or any other way of venting his fury. He dismissed his underlings and watched the newscast alone, his anger and blood pressure rising with each second. There was Captain Munasinghe, screaming uselessly at his troops as they ingloriously ran away from Moonbase's garage. There was Munasinghe, obviously in a fit of hysteria, fumbling with a grenade and charging through the wide-open airlock. And there was Munasinghe, killed by his own grenade.
Idiots, Foray fumed silently.
Who allowed this to happen? He banged a chubby fist on his phone console and demanded to be put through to Aidan McGrath, owner of Global News. But even before the electronics could make the connection, he canceled the call. "It will do no good," Foray told himself. "The cat has escaped the sack." Whether or not McGrath has gone back on his promise to me no longer matters. Neither of us can put the cat back inside now. Yet he made a mental note to work more closely with the new morality zealots in Washington who wanted to put more limits on the news media. Breathing deeply in a vain attempt to calm himself, Foray put through a call to Corsica instead of Atlanta. By the time Joanna Brudnoy's surprised face appeared on his desktop phone screen, Foray had almost regained his self-composure. "Madame Brudnoy," he said as pleasantly as he could manage. "Mr. Foray," she snapped back. Obviously she was not happy at being detained in Corsica. "It has come to my attention that you wish to return to your home," Foray said. Joanna cocked a brow at him. "I didn't come back to Earth to sit in a Corsican jail cell, no matter how nicely furnished it may be." "I quite understand," said Foray, "and I agree. Your detention has been a sad error on the part of certain over-anxious members of my staff. I apologize most humbly." Joanna looked totally unconvinced. Foray went on, "I am giving orders this instant that you are to be released and provided transportation for whatever destination you wish." Warily, Joanna replied, "We've been given to understand that we'll need some hefty security because of public resentment over the peacekeeper's death." Foray made himself nod reluctantly. "Alas, that may be true, madame." "If you don't mind," said Joanna, "I'd rather provide my own security, and my own transport, too." "Of course, whatever you wish." The woman looked suspicious. Foray made himself smile at her as he thought, with a bit of luck, some fanatic will assassinate her. Joanna mumbled her thanks to Foray and broke the phone link. Looking up from the screen, she saw that Lev was already on his feet. "We're free to leave," she said, not quite believing it. Lev scratched at his beard. "Something's changed Foray's mind. I wonder what it was." Joanna had no answer. "Do you think Rashid got to him at last?" With an angry shake of her head, Joanna replied, "No. I think Rashid was very happy to keep us bottled up here. I think he's going to be badly shaken up when we arrive in Savannah. At least, I intend to shake the little rat as hard as I can." Day 10. "He hasn't been alone for more than 5 minutes," the mercenary grumbled to himself. "I don't mind taking him out in front of witnesses if I have to, but it'd be better to get him alone, make it look like an accident or something natural, like a heart attack." He almost laughed to himself. Heart attack? The kid's 25 years old and healthy as a horse. It's going to have to be an accident. Plenty of places for an accident to happen, he reasoned. Might have to take out a whole lot of people, though. Knock out the air pumps or rig an explosion in one of the labs. He hasn't gone out on the surface since this thing started. It'd be easy to get him when he's in a spacesuit. Or maybe in the airlock. Christ, I'm starting to grasp at straws. Why is it so fucking tough knocking off one guy? Because you don't want to do it, he answered himself. Because you really admire the kid. He's everything you could have been if you'd been born different. Yeah, sure. And I could fly if I had wings. The facts of the matter are that you've been assigned to decapitate the leadership here, and this Stavanger kid is the leadership. Sooner or later, the peacekeepers are going to come back in force and either take this base or flatten it. If you haven't done your job by then, you're dead. Either you get killed in the battle or they drag you back to headquarters, a failure, and you know what that means. Better to get yourself killed trying to do your job. He tried to calm himself and think his problem through. The only time Stavanger's alone inside the base here is when he sleeps. And he hasn't been doing much sleeping the past 10 days. Conferences all the time. He's always got a gaggle of people around him. Maybe tonight, though. He's got to sleep sometime. Maybe I'll walk him to his quarters and do him there and get it the hell over with.